Ice spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today, well, she's been waiting forever to do this episode. It's Sierra Ryan, everyone.
Woo! Hello, finally.
Finally.
My musical theater and my nerd cred are crashing together. Woohoo!
And has nothing to do with Gene Kelly, surprisingly.
No.
How are you?
I am good. I am very good. Yeah.
And we're here today to talk about Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Season 2, Episode 9, Subspace Rhapsody. It was written by Dana Horgan and Bill Wolkoff. Music and lyrics by Kay Hanley and Tom Pulse of Letters to Cleo. Mm-hmm. Hello. Mm-hmm. It was directed by Dermot Downes. It premiered on August 3rd, 2023. And according to IMDb, an accident with an experimental quantum probability field causes everyone on the Enterprise to break uncontrollably into song, but the real danger is that the field is expanding and beginning to impact other ships, allies and enemies alike. So I don't watch the show. I don't hate Star Trek. I just am not a, I'm not like a super fan of it. Like, I'll watch it if it's on. I'm not a Trekkie. Okay. I've seen the Chris Pine movies.
Okay. So, you know, the basic characters of, except for Christopher Pike, you know, the Captain Pike, you know, basically the general characters of
the ones that they mentioned in this episode, like, right. Uhura is our main character and kind of our buy-in for this episode.
She's become the hero of Strange New Worlds because of just her awesome capabilities as a communicator, as a diplomat, as part scientist. She's wonderful.
So I'm going to have a lot of questions.
Yes. Okay. I will preface everything by saying, as I am a Star Trek fan and I've watched basically almost every iteration, not so much Voyager, but I'm definitely a Star Trek Next Generation and original, and I've watched all the Strange New Worlds episodes and Discovery and everything like that. I am not an encyclopedia, and I might get things wrong, so please my fellow Trekkians, please don't hate mail John
if you're gonna write in.
Yeah,
respectfully write in. Sierra's a human.
Exactly. I am just a musical theater nerd, and everything is crashing together. So that's
first and foremost,
yes,
this is supposed to be like a multiversal look into like the original series, or is this supposed to predate that?
This is a prequel to the William Shatner-esque,
Captain Kirk,
because he's actually in the episode. If you remember, James Kirk is in the episode,
right? Spock and Uhura
and Spock and stuff like that. But Christopher Pike was the original captain of the Enterprise, and we kind of know his, because of the original series, we kind of know his fate, which is very tragic. And his in Strange New Worlds, the character played by Anson Mount is dealing with the knowledge of his future, which is very tragic.
Because it seems like in this, what I saw in this episode is that like multiverses and time travel is a thing in this world.
True.
Because of
Lana Singh. Yeah.
Yeah. With Kirk.
Yes, exactly. She had a little romantic affair, and she's
with that Kirk version, I should say.
And she still has his watch, and she's still weirded out because she was able to be kind of herself, because her past, for anyone who didn't know, is that her grandfather, her great-grandfather, something is Khan. So of Wrath of Khan fame.
Yes.
So she's kind of dealing with that legacy. and but she can be herself when she goes to a universe and the Kirk there doesn't know who that is. The Khan doesn't.
So there's multiple Kirks throughout.
Right. There's multiple Kirks. Okay. Everything like that. So she returns and she's kind of weirded out by this current universe Kirk.
So one more question while we're laying the groundwork.
Yes.
Of Strange New Worlds. Is Uhura the narrator, or is every episode a different character?
It's kind of like the original. It's you know, third person omniscient, you know, kind of looking at everyone at the same time. There's no, you know, obviously the captain is you know, kind of a focal point with everyone, but that's just because of his role. There's no one star throughout.
Oh, no,
the
no.
Whole
I'm saying
series.
So I know
just for this episode,
I know in other episodes, in other series, mm-hmm. they start with Captain's Log and it's the right. captain giving voiceover to like preface you into what's going to happen.
Right. In this case, it's Uhura saying,
right,
we're having to deal with communications power issues. So I'm suddenly the old fashioned receptionist, like connecting everyone at the top. Yeah.
I guess my question is, with this series, are they exploring the other characters that they're
everyone
the ones?
Gets their little log, you know, depending on what the center of the episode will be. Sometimes it's the captain, sometimes it's Spock, sometimes it's Uhura, sometimes it's just some random person. Because
this episode, the major theme is communication.
Right.
So obviously they have Uhura. And I believe I was reading, it wasn't her. I believe it was actually the person who plays Christina Chong.
Chong, yeah.
I believe she was the driving force for having this.
Yeah, I think there were a couple people, including Celia Gooding, who plays
who does play Uhura. Okay.
Uhura. There was it Celia Rose Gooding. Both of them and a couple other people were like, "This is we should do a musical. We can kind of sing. We're pretty damn good.
Yeah.
We should sing." And obviously, there's varying degrees of vocal ability throughout the cast. But I think they did a pretty good job. And
everyone's
like,
a singer in this, because
except for the doctor. The doctor was like, "Yeah, I don't sing."
Well, so they were heavily inspired by Buffy the Vampire Slayer once more with Feeling. And I read that before I saw the episode and I was just like, so who's the Allison Hannigan of the bunch?
Well, there's that mention of bunnies.
There is that mention of bunnies.
But
famously, Allison Hannigan only has one line of singing in that entire episode. And it's, I think this line's mostly filler.
Yeah.
So I was waiting for somebody like that. And I was like, oh, maybe Rebecca Romijn. But
she has a song.
She has like three songs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. She has a couple songs.
And then I thought it was going to be Pike, right? Mm-hmm. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Did I say his name right?
Anson Mount plays Pike.
Yeah, but no, he has a whole song too, which was just so silly.
I know. We'll get into those kinds of things. But like in general, I loved the fact that, you know, this is the first music. There have been musical moments in Star Trek, like Leonard Nimoy had to sing as Spock in the original, and there's been like little, you know, concerts and Data tap dancing to, you know, to something or whatever.
But not a full
But this
blown.
Is the first where the reality, the fantasy, which is what musical theater truly is, and musicals are. It is a fantasy whereby the physics of the world have been modified from our reality so that we all sing together. We know the choreography. We have some random orchestra somewhere playing. And this was like the perfect combination of what I love about fantasy or sci-fi or whatever is because you can kind of throw things that don't necessarily fit together, like Star Trek and musical theater, and actually make it logical, ?
It's again, they were heavily influenced by Buffy, so in that episode it was a spell,
it was a demon,
a curse,
exactly.
So then in this one it's that temporal
rift
thing that they were trying to communicate with, that they then realized, then Carol Kane.
Yes, I know. She plays a very odd character.
Shows up and is like, try music.
Yeah.
So,
and I couldn't remember, and I'm not sure if I could find online. I know the song that they play is Anything Goes. Is it Patti LuPone's version? Which version of that?
Sounds like Patti LuPone's version.
I don't know.
Version.
Maybe someone can write in and let us know. But I just love that it's like, let's just play something from the American Songbook. Oh, let's do Anything Goes.
No, it's not. My apologies. According to IMDb, it's performed by Eileen Rodgers.
Eileen Rodgers. Oh, is that the original? That's the original, right?
I guess.
Or,
Now, okay. So this is now my question to you.
Okay.
If you were in charge of writing this episode, right?
Yes.
Would you have picked that song to be the one that they send?
Which is, it's kind of, and I was thinking about it having, you know, rewatched it again. Because they're like, oh, let's play, you know, something from American Songbook. And then the rest, I mean, there's a kind of, every song after it kind of represents a genre of musical theater.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them are feel like American Songbook, you know, in nature, kind of. I don't know. I would have kind of found a song that more connects to the songwriting styles that we suddenly would be. Listening to for the rest of it, which kind of is a bunch of different styles, so it's kind of hard to find one song that matches all of those things. Maybe it's about rights. Maybe it's like, hey, let's find something that we already have. Paramount already has the rights to
of
use.
Course, I mean, you know? Yes, that is also an issue, but my thought was like, it felt more like a response to the dialogue that's happening in that scene,
true.
Rather than representation of like a communicative song,
right?
Or something, because I'm assuming they're looking for life elsewhere. Is that the whole premise that I'm missing?
They're I don't, you know, this is just kind of like they're trying to find a way to experiment with a subspace fold to increase the ability for them to communicate faster. So they're trying to create better Wi-Fi.
They find
the subspace fold, which means that it can connect parts of subspace closer together. It's like folding a piece of paper. So you're trying to get from point A to point B. And if you try to use those to communicate, you can communicate faster. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to boost their own communication and make things even. So they're trying these experiments on it, and they can't really, but they're saying like, oh, let's play a different frequency at it and see what happens. It's kind of not very smart kind of experimentation, because they just
throw
anything goes at it.
But also it feels like they're like, we have to justify them singing.
Right. Exactly.
So,
you know, Anything Goes. I mean, sure. Maybe
I don't know. I it was just a little thought experiment I had, because I was just like, I don't think this is a good song for you to choose as your test.
I mean, what are you going to do? Cabaret?
But I like your idea, though, at least finding a song. It doesn't have to be theater.
No, not true.
It could have been the Beatles.
It could have been the Beatles.
I mean, but again, with
Hamilton,
rights and everything,
you know?
Of that.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it could have been anything. And that one was just a weird way, and then and I agree with you that it should have been tonally closer to what we're going to do,
because obviously it's easier to pick a song that's closer to the writing than write a song that's closer to the song to reverse.
Play it, get a Letters to Cleo song, for fuck's sake. You got them writing the music, and they wrote 9 original songs.
Yeah, which is pretty impressive.
Which is very
one
impressive.
Episode. There was a lot of music in this, which I truly appreciated.
Yeah. I mean, because like the first quarter was them building it up and everything, and you get to Status Report.
I will say my first reaction, because when I heard about the first musical Star Trek episode coming up, my first reaction was my friend Lawrence Niels is a producer, and he's a singer, and he's a incredible cosplayer as well, and he has a every so often he produces something called Cosplay Cabaret, where he will take something that is musical theater or rock or whatever, and people in costume, in character, will perform that. And it can be on theme, it can be kind of off theme. My instinct was like, oh my God, Lawrence is going to have like 9 new songs to do. And I was just like, yay, more content. It's really kind of cool to think of. And the other thing I will also say, there's kind of a 10th piece, because
actually there's 11, because then the ending as well.
Yeah, well, that's like a mishmash.
It's a medley,
mega,
yeah,
mix, but the mega mix at the end.
The opening, I read that they reworked it, and you can tell that it's very different. It's a little, it's more of a vocal thing, and
yeah, it's not quite a cappella because there are strings and percussion and other things behind it.
But it's like Glee in a way.
It's Glee. It's like my vocal group Marky Five could do a version of this, you know, yeah, that kind of thing. And it's concentrated on the human voice, which is so lovely.
If y'all are invited to that cabaret that you're talking about, you should do opening.
And we could. That'd be fun.
And you could be like, I've got the costumes.
There we go.
Yep. So with Status Report, though, I didn't understand why everyone was apologizing. They would always have apologies.
They're weirded out. They don't understand what's going on, and it's kind of like farting on. You know, it's like, sorry, I happened.
Well,
I didn't know
if that was also another
that.
Thing from this series that everyone says apologies for interrupting you.
Something. It's we appear to be singing. You know, it's just one of the, I'm not doing this on purpose. They're at their job. They're professionals. They're not supposed to start singing in the
middle of,
you know, that's unprofessional. So of course, and to have the first singing line come from Spock is just perfect, because he is the logical person. He is not the emotional person. He tries to be as logical as possible. So singing for him in the middle of out of nowhere is the most illogical thing for him to do. And it was so joyous to be just like, this is the way to introduce the concept of Star Trek characters singing in a musical, is to just mm-hmm. break it open with the least likely character on the entire ship to start singing.
But then you showcase Christina Chong, mm-hmm. Celia Rose Gooding, and Melissa Navia, who plays Lieutenant Ortegas.
Yes.
Who are like, they're like
singers.
These are the singers.
Yeah.
There's
Although
other
Ethan
singers.
Peck,
these
Ethan
are the
Peck
singers.
And, who played Spock, and Jess Bush, who played Nurse Chapel, who's all on white.
Oh, yes.
They were very nice. I liked their quality of voice. And who knows how much, you know, fixing and takes.
Oh, you can tell that there's
and,
so much auto-tune.
And auto-tune, you know, but there's some nice qualities of their voice that shown through. And even Anson Mount, you know, he had some very hilarious moments where at the very end of the first sequence, he just belts out, "But why are we singing?" or something like that, and then it cuts to the titles, and it was just like, that is
yes, because
perfect opening.
This is a good episode where I feel like again, as somebody who has never watched the show before,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
it feels like they're introducing the rules of the concept of musicals to people who aren't into musicals,
right?
And
or the concept of Star Trek to the people who are in musical theater.
Because later in the episode they talk about, you know, songs happen when there's extreme emotions, and they get a little meta with mm-hmm. everything.
Yes.
And you're just am I watching?
Which is a joy for me. I love it when they just have these moments of like, did I just sing? Did I just sing my heart out? Oh my God. You know, that I also love the fact that I'm also a fan of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I'm not sure if you know that whole world. And
I do not.
One of the ships, it's a satire comedy, British, in which the rules of physics are meant almost always as a joke, not to be taken literally, but there's this underlying kind of like quantum probability concept that runs through it, and one of the main ships runs on what's called the infinite improbability drive. It basically,
which is what they mentioned something like that in
which
here.
Is kind of they don't say infinite improbability, but they do talk about the fact that at one point they're messing around with this subspace thing where multiple realities like are happening at the same time, and in one of them the physics are so that musical theater bursts out. So yeah, that, you know, to me that kind of layering of kind of geekdoms was pretty fun.
Honestly, I was, when you told me about this, because you were the one that I heard about this from, I was expecting, have you seen The Marvels? You've seen
Oh,
The Marvels.
Of course. I love The Marvels.
I was expecting that one water planet where they only communicate through song.
Through song, yeah.
And I was expecting something like that. I mean, yes, this is inevitably what happens where they communicate through song, because
right,
that's what they
but
did.
But it's not the culture. It's a scientific.
Yes.
I
thought, you know,
anomaly.
I was like, oh, they have a mission on a musical planet or something.
And then they all have to like learn a song, get married or whatever. Yeah.
But like no. This one, and it was wild watching it, because I am however many episodes deep into musicals and everything, and I'm like, I know the rules, but like to hear people be like, these are the rules of musicals, I'm like, it felt like Randy and Scream telling the rules of horror, like slasher
well, you know,
films.
the ship has every single, you know, Wikipedia encyclopedic page on musical theater. It's easy for them to be like, so, you know, ChatGPT in the future says that musical theater in the, you know, early 2000s,
like,
you know, 20th century was, this is the rules.
Rebecca Romijn has a whole monologue about musical theater, and I'm just like,
and she likes Gilbert and Sullivan, which was her character in an original episode liked Gilbert and Sullivan, so that's like a continuation.
Wait, is she from the, is her character in the original series, you mean, or
sort of like her as number one? She is, I think, because she and Christopher Pike, her number one character, and the Captain Pike were together.
Got it.
Yeah.
So that got me thinking, because she mentions it as well in Connect to Your Truth, which is the second song.
Right.
Where I was just like, wait, when does Star Trek take place? Like, it's in a future, right?
24th century, 25th, something
so
like that.
To then my knowledge is like, Gilbert and Sullivan is still a thing? Like, I mean, Mozart,
yeah,
but like.
Yeah. Well, it's, and we'll talk about like, there's a reason why there's so much older material in Star Trek, even from
what is
because of the rights. You know, it's easy to play a Mozart. It's easy to do a Gilbert and Sullivan thing. It's easy to quote Shakespeare.
It was just me going like, okay, I know it's like in a future.
Yeah.
In the future. I just don't know how far into the future.
Well,
they would
create, you know, they had a holodeck, which means they could just go in and have any fantasy they want. And a lot of the times they wanted to do something that was from 1940s, or, you know, let's do an 1880s romance novel, you know, or let's do Robin Hood and pretend to be, you know, Maid Marian or whatever. So they were trying to, you know, have fun with the fact that in the future, maybe they enjoy the classics a little bit more.
Yeah, relive
with
everything.
Taylor Swift in Star Trek, unfortunately.
Oh, my God.
No Beyonce, but I know.
So God, honestly, for not knowing the material, this was a very enjoyable hour of television
that I watched.
Yeah. It was fun to hear them be meta. And also I was just waiting for somebody to like be the not singer, but like everyone still carried a tune. I will say that.
Yeah. And those who didn't necessarily want to sing,
they probably were like, give me some ooze.
Yeah.
And I'll do the last number, because everyone's in the last number. Although,
well, I just love how everyone is using their own voice. There's no dubbing at all. And you know, and they might be manipulated digitally at least, but I really appreciated that. In fact, like the idea, the concept, like I think number one says, oh, you know, in the scene where they're talking about how expanded this blast of the anomaly has happened and has affected 12 different Federation ships, and she, in a non, you know, a non seen non viewed scene, number one says, yes, he explained to me in a surprisingly beautiful baritone. And it's just like all these hidden voices, you know, even in other ships that are happening.
But then it hits the lovely. Like, it not only hits the Federation ships.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm good.
Yay!
It hits the Klingon ships, and they're like, nobody wants to hear Klingon sing. And I was like,
singing.
I fucking
do. And then they do.
And then they do. And then my question now is, so did Lin-Manuel Miranda write their verse?
No, I don't think so. But
it sounded, because, you know, it sounded, I died when the head Klingon started talking and then just went, rap.
Yeah, and then suddenly starts doing like a NSYNC K-pop kind of thing. Here's a fun little fact. So there was a character early in the first season called Hemmer, who's very blue. He's one of the blue ones with the antenna.
Okay.
Starts with an A, but you know those who know. So he played this very well loved character, who is not in the second season, or at least not in later seasons. And the actor himself, Bruce Horak, is 90% blind, and so they wrote this character, Hemmer, for him to be able to kind of use his sixth sense, that kind of thing. But hey, we need an actor to play the Klingon. So they got him back into Klingon outfits.
Okay,
and that's
what
like,
they were talking. I read that in the trivia, and I was just like, I don't understand anything you're saying. So according to Google, Hemmer is a male anier of the Andorian species.
Andorian species. Yep. There you go.
A-E-N-A-R. Aner.
Aner.
Aner?
Aner?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, okay. I want to get to Private Conversation because that song was just insane.
I loved it. Yeah.
Where
Pike and his wife. Yeah.
Well, so I wrote down, okay, this is just silly. But then I was like, but musical theater is silly. And so is kind of Star Trek. Let's be real. Star Trek is kind of silly, but they have a message.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the first show to have an interracial kiss and an interspecies kiss.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's all Kirk. It's all William Shatner.
Hey, Kirk.
But watching that scene where they're repeating the same, like they're repeating, this is a private conversation.
Right.
So many times.
So many different times. Yep.
I was like, I was about to hate on it, but then I went, no, because that happens a lot in musicals.
In musical theater, yeah. But you also have to understand, and which is why Lara Singh turns off the communication, the scene has a point. It shows the danger of both to the characters individually and from the Federation to the Klingons who are on their way. Like, oh, shit, we cannot have this kind of communication go outside the Federation because we might cause a war to happen.
Which, again, we learn from Buffy and from Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist with the whole heart songs, like musical theater. And I'm assuming they're like, nobody has seen those. Maybe the Buffy episode, but nobody really watched Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. So we have to write it in here.
Yeah.
So in musicals, the reason why they burst out into song and dance, well, they burst out into song because they have so much emotion that they can't just express it through words. They have sing it.
Yeah. We're not just going to sit here singing about clam bakes. You know, it's not just, you know, surface area singing. You know, we're going to go deep. We're going to have,
there are some
deep
surface area singing, you know, but like most of the songs are emotion based.
Yeah.
And then also, on top of that, when you can't speak it, you can't, and you can't sing it, you dance it.
Dance, yes.
And
which
so
there wasn't a lot of dancing, which I think was just
they had the little the little dancer troupe at
dancer
the end.
Dancer troupe, yeah, exactly. There was
that
a couple
I was
people.
Like, you're clearly not showing unnamed people on the Enterprise
no.
singing because you don't want to pay them.
Right. I think I will say like my only gripe about this is that the people who seem to be having solos, if as it were our lead characters. I would have loved to have got, like, even if it's just a walk down the corridors, just to have two people having this love duet in a corner,
like,
you know,
in
and
Buffy.
They're just,
I'm sorry
they're
to
just,
keep comparing
okay,
it to
no
that,
no that's great, but... no, just like passing by, and even if they're like, even if our lead characters are talking about the anomaly, you hear this kind of singing in the corridor happening, and then you pass by the two lovers or the two spatters or the, you know, the enemies or someone doing like a West Side Story snap thing or whatever it is. More quotes, you know, more stylistic quotes.
Yes.
From the rest of the ship, because eventually the rest of the ship does involve itself in one big final production, but they're each having their own. I wanted more of the reality of the entire ship having their own little moments.
And because
throughout.
I mean, this is a huge cast, I will say.
Yeah.
It's pretty pretty big cast, but I feel like they could have pushed them further in, to piggyback off of what you're saying. They could have pushed them further into other areas of the ship itself.
Right.
So
right.
that, you know, it's not Carol Kane, Spock, and there's a third person there. I
Celia,
believe it's Ortega's. It's not
three
of them in one little clump singing
clump,
about like, keep going, Uhura.
Oh,
we're
following.
Like, if they had them in separate sections,
yeah.
that would have been better. Is that what you're, is that kind of what you're saying too?
I'm more talking about like, you know, those little tiny ensemble moments, you know, it's that the rest of the ship has, the rest of the ship, you know, the bartender and the other nurse in the hospital area, you know, or some, you know, some engineer who's just randomly walking down and suddenly starts tap dancing because he's excited about something or whatever it is. I think I would have liked to have felt a little more
Hell,
about that. Yeah.
Throw in our songwriters as members
yeah,
of the
as
crew.
Members. Yeah, exactly.
You're really paying them for this. So, I mean,
just
if you don't want to pay that one actor
cameo,
to random.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I also, the only other thing that I would say is that it, like, because I loved the what was it called? I know we're jumping into a thing. I'm Ready, Nurse Chapel's solo. They had Ortega, Kirk, and Sam Kirk, which is James's brother, and Spock, and Uhura.
That's
there.
Who that was.
Yeah, that's that the mustachioed guy in blue. That's Sam.
Because
they had
a scene together, and
yeah.
I was just like, I don't know who you are, dude.
Yeah, they're brothers. But you had, you know, the kind of quartet doing kind of backup vocals, like little interjections to Nurse Chapel stuff, and then there was on the soundtrack there were these oohs and ahs, but none of the ensemble were lip syncing to it, and it bugged the shit out of me.
I think it's because then they would have to pay them more. And give
I don't
them a
know,
credit and everything.
But even if they're lip syncing, that's just a choreography thing. Someone had to record the
Well, isn't
the
there like a, we're getting into union talk for a hot second.
Yeah,
isn't
know.
There like a SAG rule that if you say a line and it's captured on film and it's made to the final edit, they have to like pay you more?
But is lip syncing saying a line?
This is a gray area, I guess.
I think that's part of the, that's like if you know, an ensemble, if that's like if there's pit singers for a big, you know, dance number, and the people on the Broadway stage are just ooing, like lip syncing, but they're not mic'd, they're not, you know, they're,
or their
they're
mics
not
are
doing
off,
anything.
yeah, because
the
they're too busy
off.
kicking their faces,
yeah, and breathing, you know, that kind of thing. it just from a, okay, we're trying to take this the physics of this world kind of literally as a Star Trek sci-fi, you know, the physics of the world, I wanted to see the actual oohs and ahs. It just bugs me when I'm hearing offstage voices and no one's on stage singing it.
And there's one little gripe I had with their conclusion is that, well, it's not really a gripe. It's a question.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to We Are One, the final song. They have a plan to have all the voices on the ship come together to reach a volume,
grand finale,
point, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
That will probably break the spell, if you will. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's
get to
spell.
The right frequency to kind of like,
yes,
re-zip the anomaly back together again.
But, and we mentioned them, we see that little group of dancers. So is dancing also helping? They never mentioned that. That's the reason. That's a thing.
I would say yes, because at the very end, when all of our at least lead characters at the helm, you know, in front of the main screen there, they're doing this hand choreography, and you can see Spock kind of like almost not into it, and then he realizes, oh, I gotta join you guys, and then he's doing hand choreography because that's the point. You gotta give in to the magic that is musical theater
in order
to have this final explosion.
And again, that's a moment where they fully embraced the silliness of everything. They're
and
like,
the
we're doing a fucking musical episode. Musicals are silly. We're silly. Everything's silly. Let's do this batshit crazy choreography that's like kind of doing a curtain call, but
yeah,
not.
And if you notice, the Enterprise and the three Klingon ships are doing choreography as well. They're
oh my god,
they're doing this Busby Berkeley thing to the camera. It's lovely.
That's that's amazing. Like, that's when I was just like, oh, I'm so happy. I may need to watch this show. I don't know if I will. I hate it. I had an argument with Paramount Plus and I had to buy it on Amazon. So now I own this episode.
There you go. Throw it in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Paramount Plus was not playing nice today. So it was.
Yeah.
And then, oh my God. And then you jump to the Klingons and like you see the head Klingon rapping and then the others are behind him dancing. And you're like, oh God.
I did have a little bit of an issue with him jumping to a tenor line, but I kind of get the point because
it's the joke, though.
The
you want
I honestly
him.
Think it was too short. I would have loved to have, you know, have a little bit
that
more.
It a little more, yeah.
Yeah, but maybe it just, you know, and you know, the Klingons do have an honorable opera culture of their own.
I was reading that, but they're doing boy band hip hop,
rap, which is, and to sing when they're warriors, like they're supposed to sing at the right time. They're supposed to sing rehearsed and on stage, and that's the moment, and it's, you know, tradition. But you know,
this is musical theater rules.
Musical theater to them is dishonor. They use the term, I have found the source of my dishonor, which is this Federation and the anomaly happening. So that's what they're doing.
In keeping secrets, that's the one that number one, right? No,
sings to
Laon. That her number one, right? That's her. That's Rebecca's remains character. Okay, great. Because I'm seeing
he has a name, but she's number one.
Una Chin Riley, and I'm like, I never heard that name. So number one sings to her, but then we see like the montage of everyone else on
having
the
secrets.
Ship, and I was just like, everyone's fucking horny on the ship. I mean, I understand because you're out in space for however long.
What?
So
they're not. I mean, they're.
How many relationships were brought up into this?
Right, there's two relationships. What number one is singing about, though, with her own secret, is not sexual in nature.
Oh, I wasn't talking about her.
Oh,
I was talking about like
the two relationships,
Spock and the nurse, or I feel
Pike
like Uhura also was looking at somebody.
Uhura was looking at Spock in a kind of best friend. You've got the secret.
Got it. I read it more as like everyone. Cool. Because even on the previous Leon, it's like kiss, 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 kiss. Everyone's kissing. We're all kissing. And Pike and his wife
they had the most boring, like, I want to go vacation here. No, I want to go on vacation here. Like, it was just like kind of boring wedding or marriage issues. It was just like, okay, just be honest with me about whether you want to go camping or not. Oh,
but then also, why are they floating at the end of this song?
I wrote that down as like a, that's a choice. I think that sequence was the weakest in terms of, I always think of like what the concept of a musical theater moment is, whether it's a big party, whether it's a, oh, we have to clean the floor, like in a lot of like Gene Kelly and Fred
is
Astaire
this,
things.
Is it supposed to be a Cheer Up Charlie moment in a way from Willy Wonka and the
Or
Chocolate Factory?
maybe, or just kind of like let go of the, I'm making this shit up, let go of the seriousness or don't be weighed down by your secrets. Let's turn off the gravity and feel what it's like to not be weighed down anymore. Like, let's do that.
Oh, okay. I
Maybe.
like that reading of it, but it's a little weird that she just turns around, grabs her iPad like device
Yeah, her
that
controller,
I her
basically.
controller, and then it's just like no air. But then
No gravity.
no gravity. And
Yeah.
then they start floating, but they pull out to a completely CGI shot because there's no gravity, so
Through the
obviously their
window.
hair is
Yeah.
gonna fly around everywhere. But then when we
Yeah.
check back in on them,
Yeah.
there's some gravity.
It wasn't the most dynamic of choices, I think.
Now,
But,
and the
you know.
IMDb trivia for this episode also talked about how I'm the X is similar musically to I'm Ready.
Oh,
I
yeah.
kind of heard it, but as somebody who's seen this episode more than I have, and it sounds like you've listened to the soundtrack as well.
No, not really.
Maybe
No,
maybe
but
once, that one
yeah.
time.
I
But
liked IMX just because it had these lovely low notes that he was hitting, and that might have been an inverted version of what Nurse Chapel was singing, which is going up because
yes.
she's excited. She's thrilled. She's
They I
yeah.
wish. So there's one song in here that's a duet, which is Connect to Your Truth. And then obviously I'm Ready, we talked about, has the backup vocals. But if they wanted to add another song, I kind of wish it was a reprise of I'm Ready and I'm the X, where it kind of goes in and out
Oh,
of
like
both of them.
counterpoint, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
Because that would have
That'd
been,
be cool.
that would, that's what I feel like the one style that we're missing is like a reprise, but it interweaves.
Yeah.
It's an
There was,
interwoven reprise, I should
yeah.
say.
We needed something like a heart full of, like Les Miserables, where it's like, a heart full of one day more. How would that feel? Private conversations, keeping safe. Like one
So
of those, like, massive, you know, medley
to
conk, you know.
one more time, bring up Once More with Feeling.
Yes.
I mean, hey, you say you're inspired by this. You kind of copy a lot from it. I'm
Yeah.
going to bring it up.
Yeah.
There's the Under Your Spell Standing reprise is what I'm talking about.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Where
Yeah.
you have these two characters, the two of the stronger singers on the show, let's be real, on that episode,
Yeah.
having a reprise, and it is kind of tying things together. Because,
Right.
and it's interesting that this is the second to last episode of this season.
Yeah. I think they didn't want to piss off too many Star Wars peer or star sorry, excuse me.
Whoa, I'm keeping
No.
that in.
No, I'm saying because there are Star Wars purists now that are bad mouthing the most recent Acolyte series. So that's definitely a Freudian slip for a reason. But Star Trek purists, I think they wanted to make sure that they're not going to lose too many people
But so if
watching
this,
it.
but if this was, because this is strictly Paramount Plus, right? This isn't on anything.
Well, CBS or yeah, it was live on CBS and then went to Paramount Plus. Yeah.
Okay. Because it kind of felt like it would have worked better as like a mid-season break.
Maybe. Maybe.
Because it is connecting a lot of storylines together.
Yeah.
We have a musical. And
Yeah.
it
It
has
also
some sort of like finale vibes to it.
sort of. I think it was also a little bit more of a palate cleanser because there was a lot of more heavier, episodes where like the Kirk from the other universe dies and things like that. So I think
Whoa!
They oh yeah, sorry, spoiler. Yeah, that's why she didn't. She can't say, "Hey, your other person, your other version
that's
of
why
you
it was,
died over
took
there."
Forever. Yeah,
just says, and now he's gone. You know, and then he's gone, and yeah, now I'm here in this universe and again. So there's she didn't want to tell present universe Kirk about that death because there could be a reality breaking or universe breaking conflict, you know, that kind of thing.
So
they don't know, they don't know the logics of multiverses the way we do in like the MCU or Marvels or anything.
Because
like
now
that.
We have so many, every property has some sort of multiverse.
Has some sort of multiverse, yeah. Exactly.
So I'm seeing that there are two more seasons as of now that they are booked for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel like they could fit in another musical episode somewhere?
Another anomaly. Well, maybe it would be the one where they have to go to a planet where everyone sings, and then Spock is like,
"Not again."
I wouldn't miss singing, you know, or something.
Yeah,
it could quote it or something, or you know, some sort of PTSD where someone's like, "Hey, we're gonna go see Anything Goes the musical," and then you know, Carol Kane is like, "No, not that one," you know, something.
We
like
got
that.
This weird message not that long ago.
let's not go with that one. Yeah, exactly.
I have to say though, I don't know a lot of these actors.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading that they do all have, or a lot of them have voice background, new singing background.
Yeah.
And I would love to just, I would love to see more from them is what I'm saying.
Cool.
So if it's on here or in another musical project,
maybe something got awakened. Obviously with Uhura, who's singing, who's humming to herself and makes the little earworm joke at the end. Obviously she would go to karaoke in a heartbeat. So I'm, you know,
these actors, these actors, I would like to see them in something else.
Yeah.
You know, like
Ethan
Peck.
Age or otherwise. Yeah.
Get it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else though you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
Well, we didn't talk about kind of the biggest power ballad sung by Lana Singh. Lan Singh, which is the How Would That Feel, which is like this rock power ballad. And I think that she obviously is a singer, the actress, and she knew how to lip sync the best, because it looked like she was actually singing on set to her own recording, as opposed to some people, they don't vocalize while they are lip syncing, so you don't see the whole body being involved in the production. But she was able to, you know, put a lot of emotion behind it and, you know, get tears in her eyes. I as a singer, I don't know the ability to cry and have like emotion literally like snot going down your throat and sing at the same time. It's like Bernadette Peters is one of those amazing cry singers. She will have tears streaming down her face and it's not affecting her throat. My friend Natalie Douglas also is an amazing she sings the best version of Losing My Mind, very still, but then she has a tear like almost timed perfectly in the last verse of that song. It's that kind of emotion, and I could see her getting emotional and singing at the same time, obviously with the kind of perfect recording behind it, but with enough emotion that you kind of got a sense that this is like the good,
Jacquina Kalu Kongo, I believe that's how you pronounce her name, from Paradise Square. When you watch her Tony's performance, and she is like crying,
yeah,
but also belting her face off,
yeah,
and
exactly,
nothing is affected.
Yeah, exactly. Emotionally, it's there, but yeah, I mean, and also, you know, you get also a sense that the reality of musical theater is that when someone has a especially like a power ballad where they start at one place and they end at another, you're like, oh, musical theater is, it's therapy. You're working out your your issues, you know, you're trying to get to a different spot. So I think that was also
I good. Will say though, I felt how would that feel and keep us connected were similar with their build musically. Not like saying that they're same tonally, they're same anything else. It's just that, you know, they're like verse, belt.
Yeah. Right.
I'm belting. Verse, belt. More belting.
No, I mean, they were actors first, and then a lot of them were actors first, singers.
But I felt like though that was it, modern musical than anything. And, and so
which is like AABA, you know.
Right. But like they had that belting verse, and I was just like, well, this is still very different from being from Anything Goes. I don't know.
Yeah.
To bring it back.
I also will find that to even though they had by the end, they had broken the spell, as it were, the sci-fi spell of the musical theater. I love how the conflict with the Klingons was wrapped up in a nice little voiceover, which is, oh, Spock had a blood wine diplomacy, meaning he got drunk with the Klingons and smoothed things out. And all we see is Spock coming in through the elevator and stumbling a little bit before going to his spot on the bridge. And you just get this lovely, like, oh, that's how, like, just like in musical theater, it's all kind of wrapped up in a little bow. It's easy. Yeah.
All right, let's get into Sharp and Flat, shall we?
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. I want to start with flats because I didn't have that many flats, really.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that I have are kind of big. But my first flat is for Paramount Plus not working with me.
Oh, well,
You can go fuck yourself, right. Paramount Plus.
Write it off as a tax write-off to buy the episode.
So my second flat is for Captain Pike being a straight guy. Listen, I understand there's always a straight guy. But he was anti-musical. Like, I get that he's weirded out and everything, but the way that he was acting, not Anson, Captain Pike, way that he was acting about being in a musical world, he was the dumb white, his dumb straight guy. And
he was the dumb straight guy, but it gave Anson Mount some wonderful moments because he is the captain and he's trying to keep his shit together and he's just like, how the fuck do we do this?
But there was some moments in there that I was just like, you're the straight guy in high school that hates me
and has a musical. And has to do the walk-in because he has to do some sort of extra credit curricular activity, and so he's being forced to be in the school play.
I wanted a Troy Bolton, for fuck's sake.
I Anson Mount, though, I have such a crush on him. He is so good.
Oh, he's so hot.
He's so hot. His hair is amazing, and he's able to do kind of, it's not mugging, but he tells the story of what his character is thinking on his face at any given moment, but kind of does it so smoothly and so gracefully that it's not overacted at all. And I really it's really well done storytelling, and he kind of wears his heart on his sleeve, you know, at character wise, where if something is weird, he will have this wide eyed, like, what, you know, look on his face. Or if he's being cheeky, he'll, you know, have a smile. He's just, I think that having him kind of be the opposite of Uhura, who doesn't necessarily want to jump in, but he's just like, okay, I got to make the right choices for my crew.
Yes.
Yeah. Even though I have to object to it.
Oh no, I'm just flatting him for this episode. Again, I can't speak for other episodes. You're more of the resident expert here.
Yes.
But it was, You said it best. You know, he's the kid in high school who has to do it for extra credit.
Yeah, exactly.
And then my last flat is for some of the lyrics. It's just they're just a little too silly at moments.
Either too silly or a little on the nose sometimes.
Yeah,
like descriptive care of what's going on.
Like, I get it that they're doing a lot of recitative. Listen to me. See, I know musicals and operas and everything. When they have to say this is a private conversation 20 times in a row, when they sing that, it's like, figure it out. Do something different.
But you saying it over and over again and then
having somebody turn it off makes sense. Yes,
that's the joke. It's like, we're having a private conversation. We're having a private. That once again, it's like a Gilbert and Sullivan patter song. Well, it really doesn't matter, but it really doesn't matter. But you know, it's that kind of repetitive theme kind of thing.
There are some other ones that I'm just like, there's also a lot of lyrics I didn't understand because I'm only watching this. So like during, I first thought during How Would That Feel. That she was upset with Rebecca Romijn on her man. I didn't grasp that it was a different universe.
Right, Kirk. Exactly.
Or like, I'm ready. I feel like I'm missing some subtext and context for that.
Yeah.
But frankly, other than that,
and it's really annoying because frankly, as a performer, you're like, you're gone for 3 months. What's the deal? I've been gone for like 9 months with my husband at home, you know,
and even
visiting
Kirk.
Maine.
And
What's
even Kirk
deal?
Is like, you should meet my pregnant wife. I'm going to be away from her forever.
Which is a William Shatner movie.
Right?
I think he mentions that he has this, you know, his wife, Carol, and an estranged son, David, or something like that.
Then even Captain Pike and his wife, the wife is like, I'm going on a mission. Bye.
Anyway, bye. Exactly. So it's like, all that for no,
but what
for
were
reason.
Your flats, if you had any?
I mean,
it was pretty
difficult
to find flats as a first-time viewer, I will say that.
Yeah, I do like most of the choices. I think, like I said, some of the lesser known characters on the ship could have been incorporated a little bit more, but that's more of a writing directory thing. I will say, and I love the actor who plays Kirk, or at least, you know, what's his name?
Ethan Peck.
No,
Kirk.
That's Spock.
Sorry.
Kirk is
Paul Wesley.
When he and Number One were dancing, waltzing, his feet, he needed a little more instruction on how to waltz, because
that was so funny.
He had the idea of waltzing, but not the reality. But hey, does Kirk know how to waltz? I don't know. It's a appreciative of the reality, but then as a musical theater person, I'm like, just a little bit more fantasy to get those characters to actually do the waltz, you know, that
because they try to science the logic behind the spelled curse, whatever.
Right.
But there's still some things that you're like, okay, so then, but you have that group of red shirts
that are amazing,
that are, Broadway ensemble members.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
exactly.
What's going on here?
And that
and
one,
obviously, Rebecca
that one
Romijn,
bald doctor as well. He popped in both the hospital area and the bar area, and I was like, hey, that he's a pretty good dancer too.
But like, obviously, Rebecca Romijn is a little bit more of a dancer than Paul Wesley, but like,
it was just the rhythm. He had the movements, but he was just behind the beat a little bit. Anyway, it's just so nitpicky. Also, I think that, and once again, we're this is kind of musical theater in the modern era of recording and things like that. I wanted for the big, the grand finale at the end where everyone's singing, to have less straight tone and have it be more big Broadway vocals, even if it's because we're talking the entire ship is singing, the entire ship is dancing.
Right. And
I wanted
200 voices or something like that.
200 voice. Yeah. 200 people, 200 voices all happening at the same time. I wanted the sound of that to be thicker, not these thin straight tone kind of belting at the end. And that's just my personal, because I can straight tone, but I prefer to have a nice, warm, rich vibrato, you know, sound to everything. I wanted to sound like ragtime, you know. I didn't want it to sound
you wanted
like,
to hear the voices. Yeah. You didn't want to hear just our cast.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted
get the studio singers in.
Yeah, get the I mean, you can do that with four voices. You can get four voices singing the same thing just with different timbres or with different harmonies, and you can find that voice.
Hell, the Beatles recorded Because with three people singing three parts each.
Each
so,
part, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I but then if you notice, as soon as they broke the spell, the original theme of Star Trek dun 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 dun, dun, dun came in with this rich orchestral sound.
Is that during the ship's choreography?
No, it's after everything, and they're hugging at the very end, and they're like, you know, and some of them are like, oh, should I hug you? Oh, I don't know. But you can hear this rich orchestral sound, which was in slight contrast to this kind of rock finale, which kind of sounded a little tinny to me. That was a flat.
Any other flats, or is that it?
I had so much more that I liked about it that I just kind of like forgave the kind of, okay, we're gonna just shoot this like a Star Trek episode in like one or two, a two shot, and not necessarily have a lot of fun with the camera work or the concepts of things. You
yes.
know, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Sharps. My first sharp is for, and this is how I wrote it down, Uhura being an overworked boss in the beginning.
I love her. I've had so many temp moments at the reception. You're like, oh my God, there's way too many things coming through.
Where they could have clearly had another moment, another song of her connecting people.
Right.
I also sharped how they rationalized the musical reality of the episode, which also
it worked.
Another sharp, I guess, piggyback off of that is the meta-ness.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, well, in musicals we do this. Oh, I'm singing my emotions. That's something new and different. Like, they're commenting on the musical nature of it, which I thought it was fantastic. I'm also sharping, I guess this is for this series, not for this episode particularly. Mm-hmm. I'm also sharping how female driven the show is.
Because
to my understanding of Star Trek past, it's that it's a boys club. And I feel like Uhura was the only female in the very first series.
Yeah, Nurse Chapel kind of was every time they cut to.
But a regular, as a regular, it was just Uhura. Yeah.
And there was definitely no women at the helm, pilots, you know, anything.
Right.
Like that.
And now it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yep.
There's seven that I'm seeing here.
Names.
And they're all named and everything. And they were very, very visible in this show. Granted, in this episode, granted, they are the ones that probably are the stronger singers, if I'm not gonna lie.
No, but those are all the main characters throughout the entire series. They ebb and flow, obviously, in terms of focus, but throughout the entire series, they're
right. Like Leanne, Uhura, and Ortegas are in almost one of them, is in almost every scene.
Is present, yeah, exactly.
And then you give Nurse Chapel get a whole goddamn song by herself.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bop. Anyway, and then my last sharp is for singing Klingons.
Yes. I mean,
it was so
as
funny.
Short as it was. It was
now,
very cool.
Did I want them to sing in Klingon? Absolutely. I upset, though, that they sang in English? No, was still hilarious.
Because that's where the joke is. And I would say, like, probably at Cosplay Cabaret, someone will bring in a piece of Klingon. Sing it in Klingon. Who knows?
I would love to go. I'm gonna go now.
There we go.
What were your sharps?
My sharps. I loved some of these I'm always in writing down quotes. So like in the first scene where they've experienced this, everybody singing for the first time, Kirk says, "I assumed you had all rehearsed, but I sang too." And then the doctor says, "So did I, and I do not sing." And I just love that whole scene was very funny with them trying to deal. And then when Spock described how they were gonna do something about, they were tethered to an improbability theme, and then they were doing some sort of Heisenberg compensator installation bullshit, blah, 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 blah. Kirk says, "Mr. Spock, you described that very well. I almost understood it." So Kirk, yes, and the writers were just kind of saying, "You might not get it all, guys. Just go with it. Just
what do they say? What do they say in Doctor Who? It's timey-wimey or something.
Timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Timey-wimey. It's yeah. Timey-wimey exactly. Bullshit. Just go with it. Just yeah, exactly. I just love that
Trekkies, open-ended down. We're singing.
Yeah. Calm down singing. Yeah, I loved the scene at the very end where Keep Us Connected with Uhura as that standout vocal. I mm-hmm. loved her. And because she had this feeling of like, I hear everyone's voice calling my name. She's this connected person, but she feels all alone. But she realizes her superpowers are understanding language, understanding connection, understanding communication. And
that's her earpiece right?
Translates. Yeah. I love her earrings. I want her earrings.
No, I mean the earpiece
yeah,
coming
the
out.
The earpiece. I know, but I also love her earrings.
Oh, her earrings are beautiful.
Her earrings.
But the little yeah. device that goes yep. into her ear is... Boop.
Yep.
Yeah. And
little Bluetooth.
is, to my understanding, almost everyone on the Enterprise is human? Terran?
You know, when the character of what's his name?
Spock.
Well, there's Spock. He's half Vulcan, so he's definitely a mixture. And this is pre-Worf. This is pre
yes.
This is a kind of universe or a Enterprise where not they're mostly human. Even number one, she is actually not completely human, and that's
yeah, what is she?
She's
she has. Is she Vulcan as well?
No,
we find out
in a very in a very public court sequence that she shouldn't have ever been allowed into Starfleet or anything like that because of her basically her race. She is of this is my non memorizational skills coming in. She basically is a kind of superhuman. She is very she's a manufactured human.
Got
she's
it.
kind of genetically augmented kind of superhuman kind of
I only guessed human. That she wasn't yeah. human because of her eyebrows.
Hey, you know, if you got those eyebrows.
Well, no, it's because Spock has similar eyebrows where it goes up and it doesn't go down like humans do.
Right.
And so I saw Rebecca Romijn's makeup and she had similar eyebrows. So I was like,
that's just ex-supermodel eyebrows. That has nothing to do with her race. But yeah, no.
Oh, I know. I thought it was part of her makeup design to have straight
to
eyebrows.
Be a little bit of that. Yeah. But you know, but she, so this is kind of, they're gradually adding more.
Because they have to then catch up
other
to the original series.
Exactly. That's the kind of concept of it.
Okay.
And they deal with it a little bit. The other things I will quote, exactly. I loved the Uhura's solution about singing as a group creates the breaking event, and she's like, song is communal, we worship in song, we sing to keep everyone on the same beat in rowing, we celebrate together, a grand finale, mass harmony through an emotional purpose with everything. I just love that acknowledgement, even in a sci-fi setting, that singing together has power, and you know, through history, and it creates communication and connection. And I it just made me like my
little heart flutter.
It's a good theme. It's just a lovely theme. It made me just so happy. And I will agree, singing Klingons, I screamed when that started happening.
Because they set it up earlier in the episode, and I was just like, are we not gonna see it?
Yes,
I'm gonna be
we
very
are
upset.
Yes,
and then we see it, and I was very happy.
Mm-hmm. And I also would like to say at the very end, when they say there's a lyric where they sang and they're singing it and most of the group says it's our prime directive, and then Spock goes, well, not exactly, because the prime directive, capital P capital D, is a completely different thing than their goal. Like, well,
Spock
no.
is a shady little bitch in this
He's
episode.
Like, no,
because
no.
Even earlier in the finale, people are like, "We'll miss singing," and he's like, "I will not miss it.
I will not miss singing." He actually sings the counterpoint to that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's so many little moments, and Kirk saying, "Well, one day if I become captain," we're like, "Oh, we know you're going to become captain.
It's okay, it's
don't
okay.
We know." Exactly.
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist? I wrote down only two,
sing.
Really.
Because
I wrote down How Would That Feel and I'm the X. Which I think is funny because, like, and they mentioned it on the IMDb trivia where he's saying, like, X. It's X, the letter X, as in, like, Sol 4. And that's what he's talking about.
Sol 4, the integer, yeah.
But also, he's
the X.
Nurse Chapel's X. EX.
He's coming to terms with that. Yeah. Or I solve for Y in my computation. So
yes.
Y, W-H-Y, and Y, Y.
Why?
Y. I actually think it'd be fun to do I'm Ready, because that seems like it could be taken out of context a little bit. I'd have to review, but there is some that's a very fun, exuberant, positive.
I feel like also
song.
I might also add Keep Us Connected.
Yeah. There's a lot of context in the lyrics, you know, that might need explaining.
Oh, so for me,
you know?
I treat it as something that I would listen to outside
True.
Of this episode.
True. Yeah.
So
exactly.
I will listen to that and, you know, belt my face off when she gets to the belting part.
And I like I'm the X, because it has this like Nine Inch Nails techno feel, you know, kind of gothic. Bad boy feeling to
fuck it.
It.
I'm gonna add I'm Ready as well, just because it's
go.
A good
go.
It's point counterpoint,
and of course the opening you know theme song with mainly vocals that just made me happy
for your Mikey Five.
Yes, exactly.
But and kind of speaking of, we're done with the episode.
Yeah,
yay,
it finally happened.
It
I've
finally
been waiting
happened.
For this to happen.
What do you have to plug or promote?
No, not at the moment. I mean, in come December, we're going to be probably doing, unless I've booked something at that time, I'm with.
Yeah, we're recording this very much in advance.
Yeah,
and this is
yeah.
because of a scheduling thing that happened.
Yeah, you know,
so.
But I'm part of Manhattan Holiday Carolers. So if you need any Christmas caroling happening in the New York and New Jersey area, we come in and we do 4-part harmony. Christmas caroling.
That's amazing.
Yay.
And if you know who the Allison Hannigan of this episode is, I'd love to hear your input on that, because I swear there's got I don't remember that one doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's him, but I don't know if somebody else is more of a viewpoint on this. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com, also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Threads at buttersongpod. What is your pitch for another Star Trek musical episode? I mean, we kind of talked about it.
There's got to be one.
There has to be another one.
Yeah.
They opened the door. So.
And let's just say if, you know, Paramount needs, you know, like a good singer who is also happens
or
to
five
be
singers.
A Trekkie, you know, I'm SAG-AFTRA and I can go in and sing for you on camera or off, but preferably on.
Preferably on. Come on. Be on
amazing
the
outfit.
The
I will become an alien. I will wear all the makeup. It'd be great.
And if you want to be part of next episode's conversation, well, we're starting spooky season, everyone. And we will be discussing Skullhead Face, a movie by the band Gwar. Well, Sierra, thank you so much for coming back on.
Thank you, John. Making my dream come true.
Finally.
Finally.
Finally. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And bye for now.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.